What's up? Okay, yeah.
It's still Movies on Up.
Okay. I always forget if I'd say tagline and then the movie name, the title of the show, or title
you can do
of the
it however
show
you
the
want.
Podcast. I should mix it up after 6 years. What's up? This is Movies on Up. It's not the house that's haunted. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host, Mr. Ryan.
It's not the co-host that's haunted either.
No, no. Our tagline for this week, he's Ryan, I'm Dave. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this week, it's not the house that's haunted. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will win Sidious, a prize package that will get shipped right to your house.
A correct guess will be the key to winning the prize package.
Yes, yes. And it'll get sent right to the other world or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that even that movie or is that Conjuring? I don't know.
The Upside Down?
Yes. But yeah. No, yeah, The Upside Down. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline, whatever. That's over with. This week, Marky Mark and Rose Byrne adopt a few kids in Instant Family.
Instant Family.
The Sean Anders movie. We're not doing a Sean Anders list because, I love Rose Byrne. I have since Damages. I know Ryan likes her in a lot of stuff. I knew my top three without even looking at her filmography and then had a bunch of also rans that I just kind of had to pick two for my four and five, which I could swap them out if there's a crossover. Because I like her so much, and she's great. She's just really good in everything.
Before we get into Rose Byrne, we don't love Sean Anders because we don't know who he is, but he did write Sex Drive, which we like an awful lot. He wrote the Daddy's Home movie, too, which people seem to enjoy. Screenplay for Hot Tub Time Machine. The guy's got a pretty decent...
Oh, he directed Sex Drive, too.
Yeah, he's got a decent resume as far as comedy goes. I love me some Sex Drive. I really do.
We did a Sex Drive episode because we both love it. I think it's one of the most underrated teen sex comedies of all time. It doesn't get the love it gets, and it's just nonstop funny.
One of the things that I enjoy about Rose Byrne, and it may not become super obvious on my list because I left a lot of things out so that Dave and I didn't have the same five movies, but I think she's very adept at comedy. So I'm interested to see what she can do with a really good comedic script. I've seen it before. I'm just always interested in seeing it.
I fell in love with her on Damages because she's really, really good. And then I saw my number one movie, and that was probably the first movie I saw her in, which was not a comedy. No. And then she just starts showing up in all these comedies, and she's really, really good. So she can do both really, really well. I take back all the bad stuff I said about Sean Anders. The name didn't ring a bell, so apologies. I was still thinking Sean Levy in that Real Steel movie.
That was ringing
so
bells.
F off. F you, Sean Levy. But Sean Anders, you're A-OK in my book. I love Sex Drive. Rose Byrne is not in it, though, or else it would be high on both of our lists.
But
Ryan, without Sex Drive, what is your number five favorite Rose Byrne movie?
It's not a comedy, and it's not really a Rose Byrne movie either. She does show up in Derek C. and France's The Palace Beyond the Pines from 2012. It is a Ryan Gosling movie starring Ryan Gosling in a terrible hair dye. Oh, God, it's awful. Also, Bradley Cooper and Eva Mendes. A lot of attractive people
and
in this movie.
Dane DeHaan was in this
movie. Was in this movie, absolutely.
I hate this movie.
Yeah, well, he gets powers in this one, too. I loved Blue Valentine, which I feel like is a weird thing to say, given how really sad that movie ends up. But when Cian France and Gosling got back together for Palace, I was like, all right, you got me. I will totally watch this again. I wouldn't necessarily say that this is a particularly happy story either. And Cian France really seems to be interested in how events play out over the course of time. We don't just get to see...
It's two movies.
Yeah, it really is. We don't get to see like a bottle movie. This is going to drag out for a while. You get a story about the sins of the fathers, Cooper, and as I mentioned, a poorly bleached Gosling, and how their meeting would go on to affect their sons, Emery Cohen and Dane DeHaan. So there's your first movie and your second movie, essentially. Byrne didn't really have a ton to do. She's the elder Cooper's ex-wife and the mother to Emery Cohen's AJ. That cast is packed, though. I mentioned Gosling, Cooper. I didn't mention Ben Mendelsohn, Mahershala Ali. There's a lot of Oscars rolling around.
And this is
movie.
All before...
Before they were stars.
Not before, like, Gosling wasn't, this is right at the start of the Gosling renaissance where he was coming back, and Cooper was still the hangover guy at this point. So it was a lot of them before they were doing all the stuff that they're doing now.
It makes it that much more impressive. You throw in Bruce Greenwood, Ray Liotta, all have supporting roles. This is a hell of a cast. Byrne's role was originally supposed to go to Greta Gerwig, but I think she did a really good job stepping in. She holds her own in a really dramatic movie that is, I would say, certainly more accessible than Blue Valentine, if not maybe a little less focused. There's a hell of a lot more going on. But I really liked that movie. It's my number five, and I don't feel bad about it.
This wasn't even an also-ran for me. I don't like this movie. My number five is a movie that I really did not expect to like, but I put it on for the kids one day. The cast was enough to get me watching it. It is from earlier this year.
A couple Star Wars alums.
Yes, directed by Will Gluck. Peter Rabbit. It looked terrible, but you put Rose Byrne and Domhnall Gleeson in a movie together, it's going to be hard for me not to check it out. This movie is bonkers. I feel like Hop with Russell Brand and James Marsden was like a trippy Easter movie. This is like if that movie fucked rabbits and multiplied by. It's so crazy. It's just a silly, silly, ridiculous movie that I don't know the point of. The rabbits talk the whole time, and then at the end, now he can hear them. There's no
spoiler alert. Damn.
There's no sense to this movie at all. But Rose Byrne's really good in it. She's the fun, lighthearted hippie type to Domhnall Gleeson's Hux-like, just straight, hate them rabbits. It's just a silly, stupid, ridiculous movie that if you don't have kids, don't watch it. There's no reason for you to watch this if you're not watching it with little humans. But if you have them and you put it on, it's enough to entertain you for 90 minutes just to think, like, what the hell am I watching?
I feel like my number four is a movie you like for maybe 80 of the 90 minutes, and it is James Wan's Insidious from 2010, starring Patrick Wilson, Rose Byrne, and Ty Simpkins. Loki, we've done quite a few episodes dedicated to movies starring Rose Byrne. Insidious is one of them. It's the first one that makes my list. It won't be the last, and I dare say that Dave's got at least one on his. Insidious, I think, was really, really good filmmaking. Say what you want about the last 10 or 15 minutes. I kind of chalk it up to, we had to end some way, and that's a way to end it. I don't necessarily like how it wrapped itself up, but I do love the way it was made. This is my favorite James Wan movie to watch. It's a simple premise. It's a ghost story, not unlike Poltergeist, where you see a parent try to rescue their child from another dimension with the help of a medium. I think both movies are really great haunted house movies made by excellent directors. James Wan is fantastic. Steven Spielberg, Tobe Hooper, whoever you want to credit for directing Poltergeist, the resumes are there for those two. I mean, not to take anything away from the acting, because I think all the principles are fine, but the star of this movie is Wan. He outshines everyone, and that's probably why, if you consider the name Rose Byrne or Patrick Wilson, Ty Simpkins, or James Wan, he's the biggest name of all of them. And I'm not taking anything away from anybody else, but that guy is supremely talented.
This isn't on my list or an also-ran either, but this is kind of her launching off point into movies, I feel like. She had some others before this, but this was 2010, and from 2010 on, we get a lot of Rose Byrne, and this was when she was still known mostly for drama. A lot of it led up to my number four from 2014, directed by Nicholas Stoller, starring Seth Rogen, Zac Efron, and Rose Byrne. It's Neighbors. Neighbors was a lot of fun. It was one of those silly comedies that was very successful, that actually was really good, that had a lot of heart, and I liked her role in this because Rogan had the idea, and I remember his wife saying, like, originally it was just Seth Rogen and Ike Barinholtz's characters, like, doing all the pranks, and, like, Seth Rogen's wife is like, well, you don't think I would want to be involved in this? And that's when the Rose Byrne character kind of blossomed to where it was Seth Rogen and his wife doing all these pranks and this prank battle. And I thought she did really, really well. I think Zac Efron is underrated as a comedic actor. I think he's really, really good. He's got great comic timing because he has this aloofness to him that he pulls off so naturally. And Seth Rogen, obviously, is one of the best comedic actors. And even the supporting characters, Ike Barinholtz and the one from Undeclared, her name's escaping me at the moment, Liz something. But
Franco and
McLovin, Dave Franco and Jared Carmichael, like everybody is so funny in this movie. And she's one of the leads. And she's really, really, really good because she is one of the ones that, while she's really funny, she's one of the ones that grounds it the most. She's that mom that is looking out for her family. And it kind of grounds it into like, oh, I can see where they're coming from. And she's just really, really good. And she adds that heart to the movie that makes it not just, not a knock on Animal House, but nobody's going to accuse that movie of having heart or any emotion at all. But she kind of gives it that. And she's the emotional center of the movie, while also being really, really funny.
This was certainly one I left off because I do really like this movie. And one of the things I like the most about it is that Rose Byrne's not just because they wanted to put a female in the cast. They gave her laughs in the movie, which when you've got Seth Rogen, for anybody, I'm not saying he is a joke hog, certainly not. But when you're able to give other people real, one of my, the funniest bits in that movie is, for me, like the milking scene. I fucking love that. And she is so good. And what I love about her is at least a comedic actress. A lot of times we see body humor from guys and they're okay with like, I'm going to look really foolish doing this. She did not give a shit. And I love that. She is fantastic in comedies. I left quite a few off because I thought Dave might swipe.
She's also really good at that. It's very easy to put a female in a comedy and her jokes come from the straight person type and the like, what is going on, or the reacting to what's going on around them. She doesn't do those kind of roles. She is the joke in a lot of the stuff. And that's why she's so good, especially coming from doing so much drama. She's just really, really good.
Number three is also not comedy, although it does feature her more than she appears in most of my other movies. It is from 2007, directed by Juan Carlos Fresnadillo. It's 28 Weeks Later, where she stars opposite Jeremy Renner and Robert Carlyle. This movie had the unfortunate task of trying to follow up an all-time great. And you know what? I do like the way that Fresnadillo went about making this sequel. You have the characters from the first movie and their stories are all wrapped up. So we follow a new cast in the aftermath of the events of 28 Days. I think it's an approach that should be used in more sequels. And we talk about it often. How, okay, you've got The Purge. That could be an anthology thing. Here's The Purge. We all know what that is. Let's just see a different story on that night. Or like they've been doing, okay, here's the next year, or here's the year before, whatever. But I think, man, this movie starts off so good. It's never able to kind of carry the bar from where it starts. The scene with Robert Carlyle and his wife is a fantastic setup. And it's not Rose Byrne and Jeremy Renner's fault that the rest of the movie you just don't care about as much. It's kind of unfortunate that it started that good. But I do think that those two have really great chemistry, and as the surrogate guardians for Carlyle's kids, played by Imogen Poots and Macintosh Muggleton, and I just wanted to say that guy's name, 28 Weeks succeeds in many of the same ways that 28 Days does. It gives us a pretty solid escape story with characters that you come to care about. It just succeeds at a lower level than the first movie. And to me, this is like when you come out with the Blue Album, there's nowhere to go but down. 28 Weeks Later is Pinkerton. It's good, but it's not the good debut album.
See, I have thoughts on this movie, so much that we did an episode on it.
We did an episode on both of them.
Yeah, it's one of those that it tricks me every time, because that opening scene with Carlyle and the wife, it's so good. Him going away in the boat, and then you have Rose Byrne, you have Imogen Poots, you have Jeremy Renner, you have Idris Elba, you have the helicopter scene. I think of all that, and it's like, this movie rules, right? But I've seen it at least three times, and I do not like it every time. But every time, there's stuff about it that it's like, was I just wrong? And I think that's what I focused on a lot when we did the episode on
it. Peaks and valleys.
Was that, like, maybe I'm wrong on it. Like, there's so much good going for it. Why do I not like this movie? And I don't. I left it off my list, and I do remember watching. I think I did see this before my number one. They're maybe around the same time because it's like, oh, that's her from Damages in one of my favorite movies ever and a sequel to another one of my favorite movies ever. So I couldn't put this movie on. I didn't like it, and I don't know why. I wish the helicopter scene's rad. The opening's rad. My number three is a movie we both like a lot. It comes up any chance we can get for it. It's not a Rose Byrne movie, but she definitely makes her mark in Paul Feig's Spy from 2015. This is 100% a Melissa McCarthy movie. But what Feig does is gives everybody, I mean, it's a Melissa McCarthy vehicle. Like, this is 100% her movie. But Jason Statham steals every scene he's in.
Jason Statham steals a comedy from Melissa McCarthy.
Rose Byrne steals every scene she's in. Bobby Cannavale, even Jude Law has some moments. 50 Cent steals every scene he's in. It's a really, really funny movie. And Rose Byrne is the villain in this, going against Melissa McCarthy. And a lot of this is credit to Feig, because Melissa McCarthy, she does the physical comedy, but that's not what the character is built around. This isn't just a whole movie of Melissa McCarthy falling over tables and stuff. There's some really good jokes.
You expect her to be Chris Farley in this.
Yeah.
She is
not.
She's closer to Statham.
Yes, and Rose Byrne is really, really funny and good as this villain, because she's a funny character almost unintentionally. She's playing it as the straight character, but she's hilarious. And
who has no self-awareness?
Yes, yeah. And I don't know how many actresses could pull this off, because she does it so subtly, but so naturally, to where she's just funny. And Feig's a great comic director. He's proven himself. I will rave about Melissa McCarthy all the time. I love her, and I love this movie. It's a great action comedy movie, and Rose Byrne is a great, not really Bond-esque villain, but she's this great evil personality that's just also really, really
in a
funny.
Paul Feig movie. Yeah.
I don't think we've actually done an episode on Spy, but it feels like we have, because we talk about it any chance we get, because I know both of us really, really like it.
Yeah. This is another one that I would love to have on my list, but in the interest of not both having the same five movies, I've branched out a little bit. I could see my number two being a movie that you like. I know as we get higher on the list, it's not going to be up there. Rose Byrne is not one of the first people you think of when you think of Matthew Vaughn's X-Men First Class from 2011. You think of James McAvoy. You think of Michael Fassbender. You think of Jennifer Lawrence.
Kevin Bacon,
yeah. He's fantastic. You think of Mrs. Draper, January Jones. A lot of people before you get to Byrne's Moray McTaggart. The X-Men have always been my favorite comic book characters. And as much as folks seem to like the Bryan Singer movies, I never really felt like those quite captured the characters for me. I'll grant you that they're fine. They're good adaptations. And before this, they were the best that we'd got. Maybe it was just the time, or maybe it was my disappointment with not seeing the X-Men in their uniform. But I don't know. The Singer movies never jived with me. But I think that Vaughn did a wonderful job of capturing the Xavier Magneto dynamic in First Class. It really felt like an origin story, not just for the characters in the movie, but also for the X-Men, for the larger group there. And I think that's very difficult to do. How do you do an origin story where you see Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, the Hulk, and how they all come together in one movie? That's just batshit crazy. But Vaughn did it. And he did it framed around a Cold War story, which I think is fantastic as well. And he did it having to replace actors like Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. That is not easy, but McAvoy and Fassbender are more than capable. Byrne's kind of relegated to the love interest level, but if you're in an X-Men movie and you're not a mutant, your screen time's always going to be a little bit limited, but even in the small amount of time she got, I think she makes Moria's scenes better.
Yeah, this was one of my also-rans. I really like this movie. I really like the first X-Men and the second one, especially the second one. X3 was terrible. The franchise needed rebooted, and this is what the franchise needed. And then they screwed it all up. This is the only of the new X-Men that I like.
They get progressively worse.
I'd have rather just seen them give that franchise to Matthew Vaughn and forget the others existed. But yeah, I mean, she's fine in these. She just doesn't have a bunch to do. Compared to my number two, she's the co-lead with Rafe Spall and Dan Mazur's I Give It a Year from 2013. This is one of those movies that I don't know that I ever would have found or watched if it weren't for this podcast. It's when we were doing news episodes and I stumbled across the trailer, and it was one of the funniest trailers I've ever seen.
Too funny for its own good.
Yes. And then I watched the movie and it was hilarious. I love this movie. I don't like stories of breakups and stuff, and I don't like stories of cheating in marriages and stuff. And this is a story about a marriage falling apart within that first year. But with her and Rafe Spall and their charisma and their comic abilities, it pulls it off very, very well. And Anna Faris is really good. And Stephen Merchant steals every scene he's in. And Minnie Driver. I haven't watched the movie from front to back in a while, but just doing this list made me think, I got to look up some clips. And I watched. I had to watch the digital photo frame part. That's so good. Stephen Merchant's talk at the wedding. The end where he's, will you divorce me? This movie is so funny. And there are so many good parts in it. The charade scene, it's one of those that it's a funny movie that is made of a ton of funny scenes that do put together a good story. It's really, really funny. And this is her leading a comedy and being really, really good in it.
This is my number one. I knew it was going to be high on your list. And to be honest, I was running out of movies that I could leave off. I knew it was going to be high on mine, too, so it's not like you would spoil it with your number five pick, but at least once on this podcast, we've done rom-coms for dudes or something like that, and I think that's a much easier list for Dave to do than it is for me, but I will unabashedly say how much I like this movie, and much of that has to do with the fact that I Give It a Year doesn't shy away from the calm part of rom-com. Mazur, we talked about Sean Anders at the beginning of this list. His movie's the reason we're doing this. And he wrote a lot of good comedies. Mazur wrote Borat and Bruno. Borat I absolutely love, and Bruno's not as good, but I still enjoy it. And you can see shades of that humor in here. You mentioned the digital photo. I mean, that's...
Oh, that's doggy style.
That's basically Borat's wallet with all the pictures in it. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I wasn't going to go into the bits in this movie because I think the trailer ruins too many of them. It doesn't take all of the humor out of the movie, but there's still really, really good laughs in it. Maybe the plot's a bit formulaic, as many romantic comedies are, but it's made up for because Byrne, Spall, Ferris, Simon Baker, they're all really good together and seem to have genuine chemistry in their various pairings. They're all good together.
Just the charade scene where he's pointing at the guy that's a doctor who's Minnie Driver's husband, and he's just pointing at her. She's going, disappointment, failure, just all these negative words, anything but doctor. Don't watch the trailer. Watch the movie. It's great. My number one, Telegraph, a million miles away. If you've ever heard me talk about movies,
93 million miles.
I have raved about Danny Boyle's Sunshine from 2006. Okay, so yeah, I did see Sunshine before 28 Weeks Later. It's from 2007. It's one of my favorite movies ever. We've done an episode on it. I've raved about this movie so much. It's an ensemble. It's more of a Cillian Murphy movie. But Rose Byrne as Cassie is kind of his driving force. It made the Evans turn. It's the original
before
McAvoy
Professor
turn.
X did it.
Yeah, it's the original McAvoy turn was Chris Evans as Mace. I love this movie. I almost just put it on again last night instead. I watched Deep Star 6 instead because those movies are
They're about as good as each other.
I believe they are. I love this movie. She's really, really good in it. And this is what I knew her as. This was Damages, Rose Byrne, and this is how I knew her, and then it came out about the same time Damages started. So this is how I knew her. This, and then 28 Weeks Later, and then Sidious. It wasn't until 2011 that she was in Bridesmaids, which I didn't want to mention earlier because I didn't know if it was on your list. I know I don't like it, but she was good in that. And then it was just, it's been like all comedies since then. But yeah, I love her in Sunshine. I've said so much about the movie, I don't really need to go on about it, but it's so good.
The only one I left off that you didn't mention, you mentioned Bridesmaids. I can never remember if you like it or not. Melissa McCarthy's in it, so I left it off because I thought it'd be on your list. I like it. I like This Is Where I Leave You. Not enough to put on my list. I knew you weren't going to have it. What else did you have?
I had Get Him to the Greek. She shows up. She's not in it a ton. I don't remember her as much in it as the other movies. Adult Beginners was her and Nick Kroll. Mm-hmm. It was pretty solid. And then The Meddler is her and Susan Sarandon. It's just a really cute, charming movie. It's not something I love, but it's something that I watched and it was delightful for an hour and a half.
I have what I don't think is actually a hot take. It may sound like that, but I think after it settles in, I want to say you're just going to agree with it. I think the people in Hollywood, and I legitimately think this is a thing, get Rose Byrne and Keira Knightley confused. I think that all the superlatives we said about Keira Knightley when we did that episode maybe like a month and a half ago are equally, if not more true, about Rose Byrne. The Keira Knightley movies I have, Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, The Jacket, Love Actually, Bend It Like Beckham, and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Outside of the mad football skills that Keira Knightley shows in Bend It Like Beckham, tell me the rest of those movies would not be better with Byrne.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like they're both not interchangeable, but I could see Keira Knightley in a lot of the Rose Byrne roles.
I could.
Like some of the, especially some of the dramatic stuff.
Outside of the period stuff, which I think Knightley does a fine job at. And yeah. I'm not trying to say she's not good. I just think that Rose Byrne does everything she does, but better.
Rose Byrne is one of those, we mentioned Stephen Lang last week, where Rose Byrne may not be a name that you that right. people recognize right away. Mm-hmm. She's one of those that you see and it's like, oh, I've seen her and stuff. She may not jump out as, oh, that was the bad guy in Spy. That's the wife from Insidious. That's
the wife from Neighbors.
Yeah. She's one of those that you see in everything, but she's so good in everything that it all kind of blends together in a way. She's reliable.
Yeah.
She's the person you sign, and they're good for 80 catches, 900 yards a year, no matter what team you put them on. Like,
she's the opposite, though, of Keira Knightley. People, like, hear her. Oh, she's a big movie
yes,
star.
Yes, yeah.
Outside of the Pirates, what else does she have?
Yeah, because Rose Byrne, the biggest franchise is the X-Men one, where she's a minor supporting character. Yeah. So,
Insidious?
Yeah. She's not a name above the movie person,
no.
but she's the person that elevates your movie.
She very easily could be.
If she's in your movie, it's a lot better.
I agree.
Peter Rabbit is very watchable because of people like her and Domhnall Gleeson. If that's
if
you
it's
know,
her and Keira Knightley.
If it's Keira Knightley.
Yeah, Keira Knightley.
If it's Keira Knightley
and
Josh Duhamel, it's a garbage movie.
So hot take. Everything's better with Byrne.
So, like, you know what? I was anti-Instant Family because whatever. Like, I fuck you, Sean Levy.
Turn
but
you around on
it. Now
that
I know it's Anders, yep. and now everything I've said about, like, Byrne, it's like, okay. Looking at
I'll watch that.
I'm not going to go rush out to see it, but she showed up in the internship, which wasn't great. But I skipped Annie.
I think I did see it.
Yeah, probably.
Accidentally.
I don't really skip much that she does. She's one of those I will watch in anything because she does everything very, very well.
She does. She's very easy to like. I don't think it's much of an acquired taste, which is not what we would say about next week's episode. The Favorite comes out next week, and that is the latest from Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos. So we're going to do his first English language movie. That's The Lobster from 2016, which absolutely is an acquired taste. Rose Byrne, stay far away from this movie. Not that she couldn't do it, but it might just not be a good fit.
It's going to waste her charm like it wasted Rachel Weisz's.
Find out exactly what or how Lanthimos wasted Rachel Weisz next week. But until then,
keep it up.